Now, speaking of dead people, there are things we say when someone dies. Most of us say, a lot of us do, things we say that no one ever questions. They just kind of go unexamined. Give you a couple examples. After someone dies, the following conversation is bound to take place, probably more than once. Two guys meet on the street. Hey, did you hear? Phil Davis died. Phil Davis? I just saw him yesterday. Yeah. Didn't help. He died anyway. Apparently, the simple act of your seeing him did not slow his cancer down. In fact, it may have made it more aggressive. You know, you could be responsible for Phil's death. How do you live with yourself? Here's another thing we say. This is something that is usually said to the surviving spouse. Usually a woman because of the way it works. Listen, if there's anything I can do, anything at all, please don't hesitate to ask. What are you going to do, a resurrection? This ain't the fucking New Testament, you know. You know what you tell a guy like that who wants to help? Oh, fine, why don't you come over next weekend? You can paint the garage. Bring your plunger. The upstairs toilet overflowed and there's shit all over the floor up there. You drive a tractor? Good, that'll come in handy. The North 40 needs a lot of attention. Bring your chainsaw and your pickaxe. We're going to put your ass to work. He wants to help? Fuck him. Call his bluff. Call his bluff. The nerve of these pricks. Here's another thing we say to the surviving spouse. I'm keeping him in my thoughts. Where? Where exactly in your thoughts does he fit? In between my ass hurts in this chair and let's fuck the waitress? What are your priorities? We use a lot of euphemisms when we talk about death, you know? People say things like, you know, I lost my father. Ah, he'll turn up. You got to stay optimistic with people like that. Give them reason to hope. Have you checked the dumpster out back? They used to like to take a nap in there. Keep it upbeat. Now, there's something else that is said after a death, but this one involves belief, which is where I begin to have big problems. This one happens after the funeral, after the burial, back at the house. Back at the house where the family and friends and the loved ones of the deceased are having some food and drink and enjoying some warm reminiscences of the person who passed away. Sooner or later, someone is bound to say the following, especially after a few drinks. You know, I think he's up there now, smiling down at us. And I think he's pleased. Now, first of all, there is no up there. For people to be smiling down from. It's poetic, it's quaint, and I guess for superstitious people it provides a little comfort, but it doesn't exist. But if it did, and if someone did somehow survive death in a non-physical form, I personally think he'd be far too busy with other celestial activities than to be standing around paradise, smiling down. On live people. What kind of a fucking eternity is that? And why is it no one ever says, I think he's down there now, smiling up at us? Apparently, it never occurs to people that their loved ones might be in hell. Your parents could be in hell right now. Your parents in hell. Your father, for sure. Oh, shit. Hell is full of dads. Full of dads. Even the ones who took you to the ball game. Just for beating the shit out of you once too often. And fucking the neighbor lady. And fucking the neighbor dog. And who knows, maybe even fucking the UPS man. We'll never know what mischief Dad was up to. Parents in hell. Kind of gives you a nice feeling, doesn't it? It does me. Grandparents in hell. Picture that. Picture your grandmother in hell. Baking pies without an oven. And if someone were in hell, I doubt very seriously he'd be smiling. I think he's down there now, screaming up at us. And I think he's in severe pain. People just refuse to be realistic. They don't like to be realistic. People would rather stroke themselves. You know? Oh, they like to stroke themselves. Don't they stroke themselves? They stroke each other. They get stroked. They stroke the boss. The boss strokes them. Everybody strokes everybody. So how about a big stroke job in this country? The government strokes you every day of your life. Religion never stops stroking you. Big business gives you a good stroke. And it's one big transcontinental cross-country red, white, and blue stroke job. Do you know? You know what the national emblem of this country ought to be? Forget that bald eagle. The national emblem of this country ought to be Uncle Sam standing naked at attention saluting and seated on a chair next to him, the Statue of Liberty, jerking him off. That would be a perfect symbol for the United Strokes of America. It's all bullshit, folks. That's what you have to remember as you go through life in this country. It's all bullshit, and it's bad for you.
Well, I always like to start off Monday morning by offending half the audience, maybe two-thirds. George Carlin, he's the patron saint, man. I love his cynicism, his sarcasm, and his comedy, his humor. Sort of a Mark Twain type, if you've ever read Letters from the Earth. And if you haven't read Letters from the Earth, you got to read it. Mark Twain was funny as hell. Especially when he talked about the Garden of Eden. Well, I got a surprise for you, boys and girls. Well, you know, I do that all the time. I like to spring surprises on people. I was sitting in a film yesterday watching Lucy, the movie, which incidentally is an extremely thought-provoking film about how much of our brain are used and what would happen if, 10%, 20% more were used and on up to 100%, and what would be the end result. It was quite invigorating, the film. I think you'd really enjoy it. But I get odd thoughts in the film, and I even take my little tape recorder out, my little digital job, and put a quick note in as things go on. You know, my lady thinks I'm a little crazy, and probably I am. I admit that. But I'll make a little note. And one of the things that I got to thinking about was, I maybe made a little bit of a mistake going with this insurgent idea, which if everybody who saw it looked it up in the dictionary, it would be quite plain. But I never realized our opposition was so stupid. And in some ways, smart. They always liked white Aryan resistance. I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, I don't like to change horses in the middle of the stream. I have over the years several times. But I just had the premonition through my patron saint to go back to white Aryan resistance, or go forward to white Aryan resistance. Over the last few years, I've had a number of people say they really hated to see the term white Aryan resistance go. And, you know, I didn't think too much about it, but lately I've thought about it, and we're going to go back to white Aryan resistance. Well, we'll all be insurgents, there's no doubt about that. Anybody would... who listens to what we say would say, those guys are insurgents, man. That's it. Or like the sign I put up this morning in front of my house. It said, honk if you want that black asshole out and you want Dick Cheney in prison. You know, I'm getting more honks every day. No matter what sign I put up there, you know, that skirts on the race issue and the immigration issue. I'm going to have to watch it. My neighbors are going to get pissed off because I get honks all day long. So that was a pretty good idea, putting that up there. A honk if you like this and honk if you don't like that. It's working out. So anyhow, we're going to go ahead and do this. I hope it doesn't offend anybody by going back to white Aryan resistance. I don't see why it could. But I thank you for being loyal to the insurgent also. So anyhow, that's what we're going to do, boys and girls, and see if we can't... You know, white Aryan resistance has that edge to it. Number one, it's war. And number two, it's got that edge to it that just drives our opposition crazy. Insurgent, I don't know. I guess they're either not that bright or whether it just doesn't have that edge to it that caught on with our opposition. White Aryan resistance, they really... That was like standing in a bullfight ring down in Mexico City with a red cape. White Aryan resistance. I haven't found with the media and so forth that standing in the ring with the little insurgent flag really got them that excited. I like to get them excited, pissed off, calling me names, all that kind of stuff. That's the kind of guy I am. So anyhow, that's it. We're going to do it and let the chips fall where they may. If you get a chance, see that movie. It takes Lucy, which takes this woman through 10% increase on the usage of her brain to 20% to 50% to 70% and finally 100%. It's really thought-provoking. The only sad part is they got that old nigger always. He's always a president or he's a college professor or he's a nuclear scientist. You know his name. I forget his name. He's not really a bad actor, but, you know, it's just not true. And the way they get people thinking race mixing is to put these guys in positions that almost no black person would ever be in and get you to watching it on TV and in the movies to where you begin to accept it. Oh, yeah, they're equal to us. Their race is equal to us. I don't see why we should be nasty like Tom Metzger. We got to mix with them because we might pick up some of those clever, intelligent genes from the Negroes. One really funny part of the movie was when she hit 100%, I think it was, of her brain usage. She went through time and space back to the very beginnings, and there was this half ape, half human was in the swamp there, and she just suddenly appears sitting in a chair, and this ape is sort of jumping up and down and looking at her, and he puts out his finger. You remember that picture? Wasn't it Michelangelo? One of the great artists painted this picture of man putting his finger out and God putting his finger out touching. Well, in this film, the monkey man puts out his finger and touches her finger. This white, Aryan, blonde, I know she's part Jew. Forget her name right now. But anyhow, the symbolism is with 100% use of the brain, she actually becomes God. And if you go to see the movie, I hope you get that point. I don't think hardly anybody in the film got that point that I did. That really, it's like saying Aryan man is God. Or at least that's the way I want to take it. And that's the way I'm going to take it. If people don't like that, well, kiss my white ass. Well, I stirred up a little hornet's nest, which I love to do. With these Russian nationalists or Americans who are Russian nationalists and they like Putin. I can't understand why a Russian of any age, and the one I got a burr under his saddle, I think he's around 50 or 60, why would they be so inclined to be patriotic to Putin? Now, Putin was a hardcore KGB man all his life. Putin hasn't changed. Now, he may do something once in a while that titillates your fancy and makes you feel good, but it is hard. He's not one of us. I don't know. You may think he is. I don't think he is. I don't think any. I say it. No world leader is really one of us. If you find one, let me know. I'll call him on the phone and congratulate him. And like I said, you know, here's Putin, his wife and kid, is, from what I understood from two or three years ago, was either visiting quite a bit or living down in Israel. Does that make any sense to you? So I try to criticize this Eurocultural white fratricide that goes on, where this guy's bragging all the time about how the Russian guys there in the eastern Ukraine are wonderful because they're gunning down the guys that Kiev sent out. And I don't want to get into Kiev as rotten and EU and all that. I know that. But I also know the rotten corruption on the other side. And so I keep trying to talk to these guys, and some of our associates write in too and say, look, this is a white struggle. This is a racial struggle. If it's not a racial struggle, then it's no struggle at all. Because the rest of that crap about economics and things like that, they go on forever. Difference of in economic opinion and application, difference in even spiritual application, differences in all this other kind of stuff are secondary to race. Now, there's a whole lot of people that don't accept being right-wingers like the old reactionary kind that I dealt with for all those years, but they're not in our camp really either. They're somewhere in between. Either they're spending all their time on the Jews, like if a rainstorm comes, it's the Jews. You know, whatever happens, it's the Jews, which you know is not true, or you should know it's not true. And also the fact that once in a while a Jew says the truth. I run into Jews on the internet and different places that tell the truth. So they're not all liars and all this kind of stuff, but, you know, the B'nai B'rith at the top is where the corruption's at. The Christian Zionist leaders, that's where the corruption's at, leading people, all kinds of people astray. Yeah. So anyhow, I try to explain to these nationalists that the main thing is race, and we can't be killing each other off, even though we do it all the time. Look, World War I, World War II, God, the greatest bloodbath of white people the world has ever seen. But yet, there are these people that keep going on and on about what a great battle this was and what a great war this was and what a great general this was. Well, they were overseeing the butchering of white people, no matter which side they were on. Anyhow, there was something else I wanted to say along those lines, too. Oh, yeah, I got an email this morning. Some guy's all upset with one of the so-called leaders of the COTC, Church of the Creator, which I told Ben and I told Matt Hale, don't have a centralized, don't have a church thing. Just have lone wolf creators. Well, anyhow, this fellow was going to quit the whole thing because of one lowlife guy who's wormed his way into the so-called COTC structure up in Chicago. So I wrote him back. I said, look, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just don't associate with lowlife scum. If you're a lone wolf creator or lone wolf whatever, you don't have to associate with anybody. If somebody is trying to carry the mantle and wave the flag of something you're into and you don't like them, just tell them, go to hell. Don't mess with them. Don't associate with them. People do that to me. They don't like what I say. They just go someplace else. So he came back and he's okay. But I told him, I've been nature's eternal religion for two or three decades now. I was there when Ben Klassen and the COTC put out the first book, Nature's Eternal Religion. They brought several cases of them to Southern California, and I went to a meeting. I think it was a National Socialist meeting in San Diego, and they handed them out. And incidentally, there was a lot of identity people, identity Christians were taking those books, and they liked them too. So that makes you scratch your head a little bit. Of course, at that time, I was still Christian Identity. And I grabbed the book and became friends with Ben Klassen, even though it was an on and off stormy relationship. But Ben Klassen forged the way for a new white religion, whether you like it or not. If you don't like the way he did it, do it yourself. But he did it, and he spent a tremendous amount of money and tremendous amount of his fortune he made off inventing the electric can opener. So anyhow, there's nothing else around. I mean, who else has come up with a religion for the white race? Who else? And I want to tell you, in those early days of the 70s, they called Ben Klassen everything but a white man. All the preachers in the right wing, racists, were attacking him like mad all over the place. He, in latter days, had a stroke, and he was in ill health. And it's true that Ben Klassen committed suicide. But if I had really extreme bad health and pain and all that kind of stuff, I'd have no qualms if I felt like it to commit suicide. I think suicide is very honorable under the right conditions. I think committing suicide over trivial things or a girlfriend that don't put out is a little extreme. But suicide to our race has always been an honorable thing if it's done for the right reasons. The Romans did it. The Greeks did it. The Vikings did it. So anyhow, but they even held that against Ben Klassen. And then they even accused him of being a child molester and a murderer and all that, which is was totally false. That was Harold Covington put that crap out, of which there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever. This is how low some people who claim to be a part of the struggle can go. There's no lower that you can go. That's lower than trying to crawl under a snake's belly. Anyhow, I didn't want to get off the track too much here. Let's see, what else have we got to talk about? Oh, I'll bet you didn't know this. There's a book been written about the atomic bomb and the use of it on Japan. And, you know, when they flew out the big boy, the one bomb that was supposed to go either to Nagasaki or Yokuro, I think it was the name of the city in southern Japan, they barely got that B-29 off the ground. That thing was so heavy. And then they got cloud cover over Noguro, if I'm mispronouncing it, I apologize, which is in southern Japan. But the cloud cover was so bad they couldn't zero in, use their bomb sights. So the secondary choice was Nagasaki. Now let me tell you something about Christianity. It turned out that every person on that plane, on that B-29, was a Catholic Christian. And I'm not just picking on Catholics. I've been a Catholic, and I know a lot of really nice, honorable people that are Catholics. But these were all Catholics getting on a plane with this terrible weapon to drop on thousands of people. And guess what their landmark was for dropping the bomb? It was the largest Christian church in Japan, which had a pretty big building. They had 1,200 members in that church. And the steeple was up pretty high, and they're going to use that as zeroing in. So here is a plane carrying this devastation with an all-Catholic crew dropping that big boy right on the zero point of a Christian Catholic church. And of course, Japan had quite a sizable Christian population at the time. Not too many, but they had 1,200 people in that church. That gives you an idea of religion and how religion is totally misused. Even if it's meant to do well, it doesn't do it. Whenever they get in a bind or something, they use it for evil methods, evil control. So that's something I thought you might want to know, or maybe not know. Another thing we got to remember is, in any situation in the country today, we cannot take the side of the system. The system is our greatest enemy now. Now, you can say it's the Jews all you want. Sure, there are plenty of Jews involved. But too many people out there excuse millions of white Christians and white other people from being responsible for what's happening to us. And so we have to take the position each time of being anti-system and explain our reasons why. Now, with this shooting of this black child, who was about 6'3", I guess, over in Missouri, that's gone on for weeks. The media keep hyping it. Of course, if it had, like I said the other day, if it had been a white person gunned down by a black cop, it would have been back in the used car section. But we know that. And we know the danger of blacks. I get people are wanting to get a little bit too cozy with the blacks, because we are in a racial struggle. And we're going to get to the place where there's going to have to be some pretty rough things done. And so there's this segment of the right wing that have left sort of the right wing, but they're over there sort of in limbo, and they're talking about, oh, we can't call them niggers. We can't be mad at them. We can't hate any of them, because we can't get any place if we do that. Well, I'm going to tell you, friend, if you don't realize the danger of the black race in its proximity to the white race in North America, you don't know what you're talking about. You can't just say, well, we'll sit and see what happens, or we'll go out and put all our money and time and weapons behind fighting the Kikes or some other group. The problem is not the problem. The answer is race. It has to be race. Number one. Everything else is secondary. So you'll find me sometimes give a little bit of slack to blacks, because, like, here's one. I'll give them a major piece of slack. When they brought the blacks in here from Africa into the South for cheap labor, cheap capitalist labor, I would have been happy if all the black slaves would have rose up, killed all the overseers, slit the throat of the plantation owners, commandeered by health, stealth or wealth or whatever, the ships, and taken off. Even if they had to take a white or a Jew captain and put a knife to his throat, take us back to Africa. That's what I would have supported. You know, like that movie, what's the name of that movie? Oh, hell, I'll remember it 5 minutes from now, but it's not that important. It's a movie that just came out, you know. DiCaprio's in it. DiCaprio did a perfect, he's a very good actor. He started out young. He wasn't that good, but he's growing into a really good actor. He played that southern plantation owner perfectly. He explained the race issue perfectly. But he still had the idea of the capitalist slave owner. He wasn't going to send all these slaves that made him rich back to Africa. No, he might want to keep them in bondage and brutalize them and keep them in line, but he, no matter how repugnant he might find the black race, he's like the guy hunting those Barbary apes I've told you about, where they would hang up the cage in the trees, and these cages would have an apple hanging down from the top inside, and they'd leave, and these Barbary apes would come around, and there was just enough room to get their hand through the bars to get the apple. But there wasn't enough room to get their hand and the apple out. So the hunter would come back maybe a day later, 2 days later, and there would be that Barbary ape jumping, screaming, squealing, and pulling all with all his might. But he wasn't going to let loose of the apple. Well, that's a white man. And that's a capitalist. And that's what those... anybody that doesn't equate the southern plantation owners with the present capitalist system are not using logic. Because, in fact, a whole lot of the money, even though the Civil War came about, a lot of that money the slaveholders got out of the South, and a lot of the biggest insurance companies and banks and so forth in the North were started with slave money. See, here's where we have to be honest with the blacks. The blacks have done a lot of history searching, and a lot of what they say is true. Instead, you know, many white people want to deny everything. That can't be true. That can't be true. Oh, those guys that ran the plantations, they were humanitarian. They treated them right. You know, they gave them three hots and a cot. But you know that wasn't the way it was. And even if it was, if they took one step beyond where they were supposed to be, they'd send the overseer out, chain them up, and drag them back. That's the problem. The white race has not been honest with the black race. And, of course, they weren't honest in the very beginning. But like I say, if black slaves and all those plantations would have rose up and killed every white person on the plantation, and maybe for a half mile around, the capitalists would have said, "Nay, this is not going to work. This isn't working. Let's get these bastards out of here and back to Africa." And the problem would have been solved. See, that happened with the Indians. People tried to enslave the Mongol Indians. It never worked very well or very long, because they would rebel and kill anything they could kill and get loose. That's something different about the Mongol makeup and the blacks. Blacks, for the most part, go along with slavery. I mean, they just go along to get along type. But that doesn't make it right, and that still makes them a racial enemy of the white race. So, you're going to have to make up your mind. You're going to be a racist, or you're going to be a reactionary, you're going to be a just an anti-Semite, anti-Jew. You think that's going to save your white race? It may help, but it's not going to do the whole thing. So anyhow, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And if you try to distort it and take it out of context, I'll come over there and whip your ass. You know, another thing that pisses me off is about the who got the vote in this country. Like, the vote, does it mean anything? I don't think it ever did mean much. But the point is, white guys, black guys are always saying white guys are so horribly racist. But didn't the white guys give the right to vote to the black men before they gave it to their own white women? Now, when I look back on it, that was a sad affair. Sickening. And white women should remind white men of that every chance they get. You gave the nigger the vote, and you wouldn't give me the vote. Your own partner, racial partner, having your white kids. And you gave the nigger the vote, and I didn't get it. I had to go on for years and years and years and finally got it. That's something we need to address. Now, the progressives are not going to talk about it like that, so you're going to have to talk about it like that. So we owe a big apology to our own women. A big apology. And what was really going through the mind of the white men in this country? Sounds to me like they weren't that racist. Or it sounded to me like it was economic, and they wanted to somehow use the black vote to build their political party or build their corporation or something like that. But no real white racial separatists. And that's why I say we've never really been totally white racist. No. There's never been a real white racial struggle, as far as I'm concerned, 100% struggle, until now. We're looking at it as a 100% race survival struggle. But in the past, it was all mixed up with all kinds of other things. Still is today with, like, the Republican Party. They want their cake and eat it, too. They can't have their cake and eat it, too. The progressives, they want their cake and eat it, too. They want to be humanitarians. They want to have equality as the national law, the law of equality, like the Marxists did, the Bolsheviks did, which was a lie. It never was, never will be. And they want to see everybody with their rights. Well, you have privileges from the ruling class, corporations, or whoever's running the show, and that's it. You don't have rights. First thing you hear from somebody wants to argue with you, and they want to use the term rights or equality, tell them you're full of shit and walk away. Because if you don't want to understand that neither one of those terms in reality are working or will work, it's similar like democracy. There's been no real democracy. It was only in Greece for a short time until they got their ass whipped. Democracy don't work. A monarchy can work, or it can be a benevolent monarchy or a non-benevolent monarchy. Dictatorship works. It can be a bad dictatorship, can be a good dictatorship that takes care of the people, takes care of the white race. Anyhow, that's another thing I'm interested in. We'll never get out of this with this vote thing, and we'll never get out of this problem by fighting for a democracy. Now, you see, we're sending white Aryan troops. We've got boots on the ground now, special forces in this Thor, non-Thor area. I was going to say God-forsaken, but Thor-forsaken area of Iraq to save a bunch of non-white Christians who I want nothing to do with. I don't care what happens to them. I wouldn't send one white man over there to do anything. What is this? They've turned everybody into some kind of Protestant missionary. We got to strap on the gun and save the world. Well, I got a clue for you. You're going to run out of money and blood before anything like that could happen. But look at how many white people around are saying, oh yeah, we should go over there and we should protect those Christians. It's always these Christians. Well, as far as I'm concerned, anybody that believes totally in the Bible is a race treason, is into race treason. Because the Christian Bible, to me, is a racial treasonous book in every facet. Especially when there wasn't any Jesus in the first place. Which makes, what a sick joke. The Jews know that, too. They know there was no Jesus. But they play the game so they can use the Christians against themselves. Unbelievable. Oh, yeah, another thing before I forget it. One of the things that got me thinking about going White Aryan Resistance again was this t-shirt I've got. Somebody sent it to me, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. And it was a picture of the most ravenous the head of the most ravenous wolf I've ever seen, with the jaws wide open and the fangs out there, and I'm telling you, it is scary. With war underneath, white Aryan resistance. And I don't wear it too often because, you know, you get into this thing sometimes where you don't want to, you know, you're trying maybe not to be a pariah and all that kind of stuff. But then you start looking around and you see what you're dealing with. And what good are these sheep to you anyhow? If they hate your guts, so what? You know? So why not? You know, I think one of the reasons why they're tearing up the Middle East is not just oil. Is to destroy all the historical linkage to our past through Mesopotamia and so forth. You ever stop to think about that? Because the first thing they did when they got into Baghdad was to go in and start stealing and breaking up the artifacts in the museum. Artifacts that were tremendously important in tracing our history. I think that's one of the things that Jews want to do. They want to wipe out all the Aryan history that may still be there. And if they bomb the shit out of every square inch of those places over there, they're going to do it. And you know what? I think they'd even like to get rid of the pyramids, but that's just a little bit too much for them to chew right now. But maybe they might have some accidents later on with Israeli aircraft or American aircraft. I know it'd take a hell of a lot of bombing to destroy the pyramids, but there are people who want to blot out history, blot out important history, and get all the non-important history you want, and all the false flag history you want. But real history, they want to get rid of it. I think I mentioned this to you before about this film. It's on Netflix, about going into this origins of the pyramid and all that kind of stuff. Let me see if I can play this for you. In this film, they go down and find the mummies. It's supposedly the cover story for the pyramid, but below the mummies, down in the subterranean areas, is where the secret of the mummies, or the secret of the whole thing was, and that was aliens. And they found the alien bodies, you know, preserved down there, which quite interesting. Which makes a lot of sense to me. It makes a hell of a lot more sense than the baby Jesus. And like I say, that's why your Jews and a lot of the Zionist Christians want to wipe that history out. I forgot whether I told you, though, that they're arguing over the plan in Texas to serve liquor at the gun shows. I'm not shitting you. I'm going to serve liquor at the gun shows. But they're not going to allow any ammo to be sold. I hope I'm not repeating myself, but that's hilarious. And you couldn't actually make the deal for the gun inside the building where the gun show was at. You had to go outside. So you go inside the gun show, get drunked up, go outside to make the deal, and end up in a shootout. The progressives are getting nothing but belly laughs out of this. They think it's funny as hell, and I do too. Incidentally, you see how they're picking off these Republican governors one by one for corruption? Oh, there's some hellish fighting going on behind the scenes. Yeah, that Texas Governor Perry, I wonder if he's going to get out of this one. I don't know. He might. He's pretty slick. I hear Morris Dees and all these twerps always talking about you're not born to hate. You got to be taught to hate. Well, yeah, of course you do. You're not born to love or hate. You have to be learn to hate your enemies and love your friends. That's part of survival. We're under the rule of evolution. Might is right. Natural selection. Tickled me the other day when I ran that deal about the bad weeds being caused by Monsanto, and they're indestructible. The progressive Mike Malloy went on and on about that's natural selection, that's evolution, all that. It's amazing, though, he can't see it when it comes to human beings, because we're just as much of under the effect of evolution and natural selection as that damn plant out in the field. But he don't, progressives don't see that, or they don't want to admit it. I think they realize it subconsciously, but they fight against it. It's a horrible sin. In other words, they may be atheists, but to them, that is a type of sin, a non-religious sin, to believe in natural selection and evolution. That's, oh man, what anguish the progressives go through trying to redo or rethink human evolution. Incidentally, that farm where that atrocity by Monsanto, incidentally, it started in Georgia. It didn't start in Indiana. But anyhow, where that's at, it's 100 miles northwest of Indianapolis. It was in the New York Times, in case you want to look it up. I'm going to get that, find out where that's at. I want to go down there and see that situation, talk to that farmer. It can't be that far away from where I'm at right now. I haven't heard of any alerts or anything in the paper or on the local news. Of course, you can hardly get anything except Christ Insanity radio shows. I don't know. We've got probably almost a dozen Christ Insanity radio stations across the FM dial here. But anyhow, I don't see anybody so far making the public aware of this problem that Monsanto has created. I don't see it. Probably because Monsanto and these chemical companies are big advertisers on the big regional radio stations. I hear them advertising all the time with this smooth advertising, this just put this stuff on your field, honey baby, and you're crops are going to be wonderful, and you'll have so many good crops come in, you won't be able to handle all of it. Just buy this Monsanto poison and put it on your farm. You know, if you look carefully at what Iran's been doing behind the scenes, they're actually pretty much out in the open. They're gradually moving out. They don't need an atomic bomb. They don't need an atomic bomb. They're gradually recreating the Persian Empire. That's what it's all about. They're going to recreate the Persian Empire. It'll run all the way to China. It will border with Israel and these other areas of the Middle East. You wait and see. That's what they're working on. I don't know whether I'm for it or against it, but knowing Iranians are a hell of a lot more white people than there are in the Arab countries, I would tend to go along with the Persians. But it's too bad it's bogged down with Islam. If it could become secular, of course, going secular, they may not have the fanaticism it's going to take to build the Persian Empire otherwise. You see, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. On that agricultural thing, I forgot to tell you that there's 16 plants that have escaped and evolved beyond Roundup or any of the pesticides that Monsanto's using, that so far can't be stopped. But they keep telling, and Monsanto keeps telling the farmers, that's okay, we'll develop something else. And it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse. Do you remember the movie way back in the 60s called The Day of the Triffids? It was a British movie to where the plants became alive, bushes and plants, and started walking around and killing people. We're getting pretty close to that. I think I reminded you of this, but if, in case I didn't, you know, the first night of the riots in Missouri, the cops were not deployed at all. The cops were not deployed at all. That's quite interesting. You know, Maliki over there in Iraq, we totally put him in as a puppet, you know. Not we, but the military-industrial complex. He was one of the worst ones they could choose, but he represented the Shiites, which have a majority of people, even though the Shiites are all separated too. They have their different beliefs. But anyhow, I'll bet you $100 that within a year or two, now that Maliki's out of power, he'll be over here living in the United States teaching at some university. He'll be a professor at some university. You wait and see. Mark my words. Well, I got a note here from Matt Hale's mother that they're finishing up his book and said she's still needing donations for publishing the book and donations for Matt's defense fund. For those of you who care about Matt and want to help, especially those of you who haven't donated before, please send me your donations. Also, I'm aware that some of you have tried to visit Matt at the Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado. Matt told me that he appreciates the fact that you have tried to see him, and he knows that you care and haven't forgotten him. According to Matt, only family are allowed to visit him. Okay, well, I'm afraid most of the people that this is going out to probably would have been in the right-wing conservative type racist. And I'm not going to tell her, but she's not going to get hardly any money from those people. And unfortunately, I don't think the defense fund's going to do a damn bit of good. It would be nice to have a book, I guess, but getting the funds to do a proper job on a book is tough. So I don't know what to say about that. I sympathize with Matt Hale's mother and Matt. But once they've got you, there's not hardly anything you can do. I mean, you can spend all the money around and not get anywhere. They got him nailed, and they're not going to let him go without something really, well, intercession by the baby Jesus might do it. I don't know. Okay. Sorry about that. I'm not telling her that, and I'm not telling him that, but that's the truth. You know, I just got a notice here for a website, and it had to do with Robin Williams, the comedian, to where somebody had gone to some of these right-wing chat room messes that do much more harm than good. And there was a whole slew of just really nasty, ratty comments, insults, and attacks on Robin Williams. Now, I'm not saying Robin Williams was in our camp in any shape or form, but he was a funny comedian. He made a lot of people laugh. And for these yahoos to go after him like that, then you see the other side picks all these statements up, puts them out there, what these neo-Nazis hated Robin Williams. This is why the right wing never gets anywhere. Sometimes you should just keep your mouth shut if you feel that way. You don't have to say anything. But for a guy to die under really bad situations, and then have all these people climbing, saying nasty things about him. He's not a warmonger. He was a type person. He was more or less a true liberal type. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that Robin Williams was on our side, but these right-wing yahoos on these chat boards who get on and say the most vile things against people at a time when the person dies, is just, to me, so un-Aryan. Just un-Aryan totally.
All about prisons, really.
Really? Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Well, it ain't a raining back home. I bet your sister's still on the phone. I bet mama's in the kitchen cooking fried chicken, wishing that I hadn't done wrong.
Oh, but don't you worry about it none, though, mama. Everything's gonna be all right, mama. They're teaching us a lot of new things in here. Things like,
there ain't no good in an evil-hearted woman, and I ain't cut out to be no Jesse James. And he don't go writing hot checks down in Mississippi, and there ain't no good change in him. Yesterday's bait, wishing that the hay was all baked. I bet he's wishing we could go fishing. Here I am laying in jail.
Oh, but Papa, don't you worry about it now. Everything's going to be all right. They're teaching us a lesson a day, and we're learning pretty well, too. We already learned a whole lot of stuff already. Stuff like,
there ain't no good.
Of rich black earth that spreads out along the banks of the Mississippi River, starting somewhere up around southern Illinois, running right on down to the Gulf of Mexico. This is the land of King Cotton, this black, rich land, and of the people who live here, cotton is their bread and butter. And though the land is rich, to many, life is pretty hard. You see that old shack over there? That run-down shotgun shack, a used washing machine out in the front yard, a worn-out washing machine, the screen door hanging off the hinges, an old worn-out car turned over in the backyard, three or four chickens around the front steps, a few ragged clothes hanging on the line. That's the home of a sharecropper. His work is back-breaking. He could spend 30 years of his life into that kind of land and wind up with that kind of a place. Only to just up and leave with just a clothes on his back, a prayer in his heart, and a pickup truck half full of used furniture. Mississippi Delta land, you robbed me of my youth, and all you gave back was a one-room shack and a mind that learned the truth. There ain't no future for the man that works but never owns the land. And now these old hard-working hands are heading for Chicago in the morning. Mississippi Delta land. Your riches ain't for me. These kids of mine and me's gonna find a better place to be. At one time, most of the cotton in the Delta was grown by small cotton farmers, like my people, 20 acres of it. These were people that lived on the land and by the land. Everything they got in life was by the sweat of their brow and an ache in their back. But today, big business has bought up a lot of this rich cotton land, and mechanical pickers have come in now to replace the callous and burr-torn fingers, the human hands that were once there. And unable to compete with the big farms, the small cotton farmer has just about disappeared. Because it's in the nature of a man to always look away to grass that seems just a little bit greener, many of the sons and the daughters of these small cotton farmers headed for the big cities and the car factories in the north, like I did when I was 18 years old, where they'd heard tell of good money and better times, where they hoped they could leave behind the hardships, the hard times of the small Delta farm. Last night, I went to sleep in Detroit City, and I dreamed about those cotton fields and home. I dreamed about my mother, dear old papa, sister, and brother. I dreamed about that girl who's been waiting for so long. I want to go home. I want to go home. Oh, how I want to go home. Home folks think I'm big in Detroit City. From the letters that I write, they think I'm fine. But by day I make the cars, by night I make the bars. If only they could read between the lines. Cause you know I rode a freight train north to Detroit City. And after all these years, I find I was just wasting my time. So I think I'll just take my foolish pride, put it on a southbound freight and ride, and go on back to loved ones I left waiting for.